are you preparing your managers to be able to have that mindset shift, to be able to create a sense of well-being on your team and also have that relationship with your direct reports one-on-one?
You are listening to C-Suite Perspectives, a podcast by the Conference Board.
Welcome to C-Suite Perspectives, a signature series by the Conference Board. C-Suite Perspectives are conversations that take an objective, nonpartisan look at a range of subjects that matter most to business leaders. I'm Diana Scott, leader of the U.S. Human Capital Center at the Conference Board and the guest host for this podcast episode. In today's conversation, we'll discuss the employee well-being crisis and what organizations can do about it. Joining me is Rita Meyerson, a principal researcher in our Human Capital Center. Welcome, Rita.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Rita, your latest research has delivered some fascinating results, and we're going to get to that in a minute, but let's first define employee well-being. What do you mean by that?
I'm so glad you asked that. The definition of employee well-being has evolved over time. We've started with the employee assistance programs many years ago, and it's evolved from there. So from a physical and emotional to financial, as well as professional and social. And some organizations even think about it in terms of purpose and environment.
Wow, that is quite a range that it's expanded to beyond where it started. It's absolutely fascinating. But let's talk a little bit about the research. The latest research has shown that employees expect the companies they work for to invest in their well-being, and that CHROs are paying attention to this. But at the same time, employees' reported levels of well-being have stagnated. Why is that? You know, let's talk a little bit more about it. Tell me what's happening.
It's such an interesting phenomenon that we found in our research. So we saw that 84% of U.S. employees expect their employer to pay attention to their well-being and have some sense of responsibility for it. And at the same time, CHROs, 95% came back and said that in our CHRO confidence index in the first quarter, that they were going to continue their investment in this, in well-being. And at the same time, so there's all this attention and focus and billions of dollars is being spent on this. And we also found that 62% of U.S. employees said their well-being was either the same or worse than it was 6 months ago.
So we're spending a lot of money on this. People are saying they're paying attention, but it's having no impact is what you're telling me.
Exactly.
But like, why is this even important to a business? Like, what's the business case for it? Why?
Well, we're seeing that employee well-being is connected to engagement. We're seeing that it's connected to there's a relationship between attraction and retention, which in fact was the highest rated area of focus in our internal results from an internal perspective in our C-suite outlook in 2024, that the entire C-suite, so CEOs, CHROs, et cetera, the C-suite is focused on that, attraction and retention. And well-being is tied to that.
So you have proof of this?
We do have evidence of this. So in our research, we found that there is a strong relationship between employee well-being and retention, as well as productivity. And on the attraction side, Gen Z in particular, which is going to be 31% of the population in 2025, and we're almost there, they really expect this when they're looking at an organization. They're looking at the culture, and the culture of well-being is really important to them. So when we look at attraction and retention, intent to stay has a strong relationship between well-being, those who reported their well-being to be somewhat higher or higher. So the other side of the coin of what we talked about, have a strong correlation to intent to stay, to employee engagement, and to sense of belonging, interestingly.
And sense of belonging actually contributes to that as well. Talk a little bit more about that. What's that all about?
It's so interesting on the sense of belonging, because that's where we see some connection between the diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging work. So well-being ties very nicely into that work where so much attention has been focused and has really become embedded within the organization.
So it's important. We know there's a correlation, and we know that it's stagnated. So let's talk about how have CHROs responded to employees. The employees are saying they want more attention paid to their emotional, you said emotional, physical, financial, and so on. It's a lot. It's a broad category. So how are CHROs responding? What are they doing?
Well, they've invested enormous amounts of resources in from a program perspective. So we see with many organizations, and we have examples in our research of the financial component. So financial well-being is very important, the physical component, the mental health. We have first responders in organizations from a mental health standpoint, professional. Think about career development, mentoring, sponsorship, training and development, upskilling. All of those elements fall into professional. So all of these elements that we've talked about, so financial, physical, emotional, professional, the social, think about when we talk about the belonging piece, think about employee resource groups, think about other ways that their connections are made through organizational communication, such as town halls, and the entire thread of communications that run through the organization. So all of those elements are important, but we don't see a connection to the larger business, the business imperative, the business case, the business strategy, tying it into all of those elements. So from a programmatic perspective, we see it, but from a larger kind of more macro level, we're not seeing it as much.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like there have been many, many types of programs, and the ones that we all heard about traditionally were things like, they're really focused more on wellness, I would say. You know,
That's such a great point.
How do you quit smoking? How do you, the walking programs to get people to walk, to be healthy. There are a ton of mental health apps, for example, right now. And it seems like organizations, you know, who've been focused on this for a while, they're spending billions and billions of dollars on it. And your survey does indicate, you indicated that, I think you said 95% of USC CHROs intend to maintain or increase their spending?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
So they're doing all of this work, and yet the investment is not, at least so far, producing results. What is going on?
It's a really great question. And you have to think about it. It is working in some ways, but we have so much room to move. And what we discuss in our research is that it really needs to be elevated to be owned by the C-suite. It needs to be a partnership across the leadership team, so beyond HR. And it needs to be embedded throughout the business strategy and culture. And we can talk specifically about where we're seeing some organizations do that. You and I were just in a roundtable on Monday, and Walmart did such a great job of talking about how this is part of their DNA. And there are other organizations like Microsoft and Sherwin-Williams and Unilever where this well-being, the sense of care, is embedded in their business strategy, empathy in particular for Microsoft.
So that sounds like, you know, if you're trying to build empathy into your organization, it absolutely has to not be just an HR program, because empathy is going to have to come from everybody, starting with your leadership, but perhaps even, you know, moving through the organization. It must make it very, very important for managers as well. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, what are you doing with managers to encourage them to show empathy, if that indeed is creating a sense of wellness in the organization?
Well, you very well know, as a three-time CHRO, when Walmart talks about their training of managers and compassion. That's one of their latest things that they're doing. So at the frontline manager level, how are you in, this is a question to CHROs, and we can look to examples of organizations that do this, but how are you preparing your managers to be able to have that mindset shift, to be able to create a sense of well-being on your team and also have that relationship with your direct reports one-on-one? And what we did find in our research was that there was a strong relationship, and employees felt that their managers had this care and that the organization was communicating it. So preparing managers is very important, but you also need to hold them accountable. So it needs to be included in, let's say, performance management. So how you recognize and reward your managers, that this becomes part of the fabric of their everyday operations.
It sounds like you're really embedding this into the entire culture. And in a sense, the concept of wellness really becomes part of your culture. And it's not a separate program. It's not even programmatic anymore.
That's right. That's right. That's where we really see this pivotal moment coming. This is where we're really at an inflection point. How do we move from like what got you there? I think we talked about this yesterday. What got you there isn't going to keep you there. And that was in the spirit of leadership. But let's think about it from a well-being standpoint. I think you can make that same conclusion that the programs, they're great and they're important. And we have lots of examples of programs that are not cost prohibitive, that are super effective. But yes, it needs to become part of your culture, part of how you do business.
So are we, we've spent so much money on these programs so far, and they haven't produced the results. Do we need to rethink how we even think about the budgets that we allocate to these programs? Do we have to shift the thinking? When you say embedded, like, what does that really mean from a money perspective? Because again, business people want to say, okay, I spent money. What did I get for it?
Exactly. They're looking for their return on investment, and they want to know what the business case is and how are you measuring it and what are the results? This is an interesting topic that needs to be part of, let's say, a larger governing body. That again, we move it out of HR, becomes part of a, let's say you have a human capital committee that governs all of these people-related and leadership programs and change programs, but it is owned, let's say, by your chief risk officer or your chief financial officer. And HR might advise and say, these are the way that we would run the programs, and this is how, and these are the elements of it. But from an executive sponsorship standpoint, CHROs really need to partner with the C-suite in terms of how you're actually going to own this. And then it needs to be owned by your managers, and employees have to have a role in that too.
Employee led. Well, we're gonna get back to this because I think we need to dig into this a little bit more. And we're gonna take a short break and be right back with more of my conversation with Rita Meyerson, Principal Researcher in our Human Capital Center.
Businesses thrive on innovation, and the line between the possible and the impossible blurs. At the heart of this transformation lies a force, unseen yet omnipresent, generative AI, the key to unlocking a future filled with boundless potential. Leading through the AI transformation is a groundbreaking event hosted by the Conference Board. This event stands as a testament to our dedication to provide trusted insights for what's ahead. It's not just an event, it's a calling for those ready to navigate the complexities of the AI era. Tailored exclusively for C-suite members and their teams, this pivotal gathering is your opportunity to bridge the AI knowledge gap and to lead your organization for its digital metamorphosis and to chart a course for 2025 and beyond. Join us November 7th and 8th, 2024 in Brooklyn, New York. Embrace the leadership challenge at the Leading Through the AI Transformation event. This is your moment to shape the future. Visit conferenceboard.org to learn more.
Welcome back to C-Suite Perspectives. I'm your guest host, Diana Scott. I'm joined by Rita Meyerson, a principal researcher in our Human Capital Center. So Rita, you know, all this conversation, it really sounds like CHROs have a huge job to do because they have to convince the rest of their colleagues, the entire C-suite, to all align on the importance of this and the importance of this to the culture and therefore the business outcomes of the organization. So, you know, how does well-being align with other C-suite priorities? And, you know, I mean things like you said, attraction and retention is like the number one focus for CEOs in the C-suite in 2024. That's what our research showed. How does this align with this? How do they connect?
When we think about attraction, let's like break it down into two pieces. Let's unpack that. So the attraction component, especially with Gen Z and our research that we've done with Gen Z, as we know, Gen Z is by 2025 expected to be 31% of the population. Not only are they expecting this, they want to see it. They want to see well-being as part of their daily work life. They want to see leaders not only talking about values, but living values. And one of the values being that my well-being, in addition to thinking about the mental health component, the physical component, but the professional development, the financial well-being, and the sense of purpose. All of these components are part of well-being. So from an attraction perspective, today's employees are looking for this when they're looking at organizations, they're deciding where they want to go work. From a retention standpoint, our research points to intent to stay. There's a strong relationship between those employees that rated their well-being as being higher or somewhat higher than 6 months ago, have a strong relationship to intent to stay and sense of belonging.
So it's definitely cultural. It definitely has something to do with the employee brand. Now, you and I both know that there's always this adage about people, you know, maybe they come to a company because of the brand and the culture that they expect, but they leave companies because of the manager. So it seems like there must be a really big job around making sure that that's embedded deep into your organization as well, if you're going to be able to retain your talent.
Yes, I like that you brought that up, right? People join companies and they leave managers. And so what can we do about that? So let's think about that. We can hold managers, we can train managers to be more equipped to manage this and put this into, put well-being, make that a part of how you run your team today, especially in a hybrid environment where you might be managing dispersed teams. And then what you want to think about is, and we have lots of examples in our most recent research that also, so not only are they including this in how they train managers, so part of their leadership development. So we talked about the case of Walmart, we talked about Microsoft. But we also can talk about how you want to hold them, you want to hold managers accountable, you want to embed it in performance management.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because again, you know, there's some managers that may come to this naturally and they are nurturing and caring, and they get the relationship between their team's performance and how they lead their team. But there's some managers that are going to say, I just want them to do their jobs. Like, I don't need to be their mother or their parent. So you need to bring them along and help them understand. Certainly that's one thing. But so talk about that, but then also talk about, so how do you hold them accountable if they don't do that? Or how do you make them, how do you incent them to the right kinds of leading and behaving?
That's an interesting one to unpack. So when you think about goals for managers, and you have your hard specific goals, achieve X, Y, and Z. It could be revenue, it could be develop new products, it could be roll out new products, et cetera. And part of that also is how you, how productive are your people? Look at the retention on the team. So when we think about retention on the team, and we know that well-being is tied to intent to stay, we also know that employees perform better when they understand their role within the larger organization. So this sense of purpose, which is also part of well-being. So all of that needs to be, it's let's think about what you do and how you do it as a leader, as kind of how we would look at that, and how you do it also with through compassion. Let's go back to the Walmart example. They're training their managers not only on being compassionate to customers and taking compassionate point of view, but compassionate to their associates. And we talked about that in our roundtable that we did on Monday, right, in our total rewards roundtable. Right. So when we talk about incentives, that's a good example.
Yeah. So it sounds like there really is a business case that needs to be explained to the rest of the organization, and this link and the correlation between well-being and actual performance, that link needs to be made. Should CHROs be driving that, and how do they do that? In the organization, is it through communications, rewards, a combination of all?
So I think that there's two parts to that question. The first one is, and then I'll tackle the second part, but the first one is they really need to partner with the C-suite. This cannot be seen as an HR initiative. This has to be embedded in the identity of the organization and the brand. We talked about the brand. People are join companies, they join brands. It needs to be become part of the brand, part of the identity of the organization. How are you going to do that? And it could be the combination of the CEO, the chief marketing officer, and the chief risk officer, or your CFO and the CHRO and the CEO. But you really need a collaborative approach across the C-suite, and having executive sponsorship across is within that framework is very important. And the second part of your question was, how do we embed it? So the communication component, co-creating with employees. We were so lucky enough yesterday to talk to Diane Gerson, the former CEO, CHRO of IBM, who talked about so many things even before COVID that were so innovative and revolutionary in how they transformed IBM, and co-creating with employees. I kept hearing that theme over and over.
And co-creating.
It's
a great one. It's an absolute great one. It sounds like we talk about making investments in well-being. How you've defined well-being is so broad, though. So, do we need more investments in well-being at this point? Or how do you handle that cost component of it?
I would venture to say no. The investment needs to be made at the executive level to determine how this is going to be led throughout the organization. What's the organization's point of view, and where does it best sit within that business? And how does it align with the business's goals? And then figure out what is the best way to cascade it throughout the organization. Are there employee resource groups that could be the right way of doing it? Is there a particular location? Is there a particular business unit that this could be championed by? Where are your culture carriers? These are the things you need to think about when you are, in the spirit of transformation, in this transformational change.
So it sounds like you can take the billions of dollars that have invested in these programs and perhaps repurpose them in different ways to be more effective in terms of satisfying that need for well-being in the organization to drive better results.
Exactly.
I'm not hearing that more programs are the answer. I'm really hearing that if you try to embed well-being into the business strategy and the culture of the organization, you really need to think about specifically, how to do this. And before we end this program, I'd love you to spend a little time and say, okay, what advice can we give CHROs? Because they are going to be at the center of making this happen. What advice can you give us in terms of how do you go about embedding well-being into everything that you do to drive this kind of culture? So let's start with, let's go through this. Let's start with management. What can management do that's going to help embed these programs?
Well, first, I think you need to win over some, you know, you might have some skeptics, so you need to win them over. So you need to have a strong business case as to why you're doing this. And you need to also determine some metrics that you are going to measure this against.
Metrics that they all agree to.
Yes, yes, yes. And I also think you, this idea of testing and iterating and being agile and piloting, however your organization defines it, we need to have that kind of a mindset also. So we need to have a business case, we need to define it, and we need to have some metrics. And then we need to think about, for your particular business, who is going to be the most valuable executive sponsor for that organization where it's going to create some stickiness?
So somebody who has followership, who, you know, people listen to, admire, who is already a first-class leader.
Exactly. And again, well-being does not need to sit, we talked about HR, let's think it could sit in the chief risk officer. We have many examples of where we see it sitting in different places. And we go back to the example of Microsoft. It was their CEO that really said empathy is the way that we're going to be leading, and started to embed empathy into everything that they did, starting with their business and their customers and how they were going to create products. And that then trickles into within the organization structure and employees and your leadership, et cetera.
So let's say you get management on board, you build the case. Now it sounds like there's a huge communications lift ahead of you to really help bring the rest of the organization along to this, which again is going to help drive the kind of culture that you're talking about. Talk a little bit more about, you know, what do you do with your communications? How do you approach that? Words of advice for our CHROs listening.
If you can, and it might be a luxury, but if you can, you dedicating a team to this, a communications team, and that team could be two people, or it could be a team, it could be a one person working on it with the executive sponsors, but you need to have a change management perspective. You need to look at where people are currently, where you ideally want them to be, what are the gaps, and how are you going to address those? You need to look at your communication channels that are being used. You need to understand, how are you getting feedback from employees? So interestingly, we heard in one of our roundtables, not last week, but a couple of weeks ago, Google changed listening to employees from once a year to every 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yep. And the results, and there are only two questions in that 2 weeks, and then they come back out with their results and they talk about it in their town halls.
So they communicate this back to the employees.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It sounds like incredible transparency.
Yes.
So let's talk finally about, you know, we've talked about management, we talked about communication. You said, you know, this concept of co-creating with employees. So what can employees do? Like, what's the role of the employee in all of this? Words of advice.
So in addition to, from like, let's say, a change management perspective and including employees in your co-creation process and having them be part of the solution, helping them create what is going to work best in your organization, I would encourage employees that don't already have a clear point of view on their well-being to be able to speak up about it. It's your responsibility just as much as it is your manager. So your development, from a professional standpoint, from an emotional standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, all of that needs to be owned by the employee as well as the manager. The manager can guide that, but the employee needs to really drive it.
Wow, and I think we'll leave it at that. That's a good capstone. Thank you very much, Rita, for joining us today.
It was great to be here with you, and thank you so much for a terrific conversation.
You have been listening to C-Suite Perspectives, a podcast by the Conference Board.